Hey, John Gray from the Hangar Z Podcast. Want to let you know the April-May issue of Vertical Magazine is live at verticalmag.com. It's packed with fantastic content and photography, so be sure to check it out. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Vertical Digital Alerts to get an email notification every time an issue goes live. Cheers.
Welcome to the Hangar Z Podcast, the first and only podcast dedicated to promoting and exploring the personnel and equipment behind the missions of public safety aviation.
Southbound is getting to a stop. Standby here. Looks like you're getting ready to bail.
We're on the stop.
Good advising code 4 on the stop.
Join your hosts, John Gray, a Southern California law enforcement pilot, and Jeff Radkovich, a previous law enforcement pilot now flying EMS in Tennessee. Grab your favorite beverage and enjoy. Before we get into the episode, I would like to thank our sponsor, Metro Aviation. Metro Aviation is the leading U.S. provider of first responder aircraft completion services and hospital aircraft operation. Currently operating more than 140 aircraft and 38 programs, Metro Aviation is active in 25 states across the country.
Fellow ZipRecruiters, it's Brett from Brotalion here. If you're looking to get swag made for your unit or department, we offer some incredible options at a great price. We can do bulk orders or create a custom web page for your unit. We make the process painless and easy for you. Everything's embroidered and printed here at our facility in Milwaukee. If you're interested, go to our website, hit the drop down, go to info, custom swag. You can submit an inquiry there, or just DM me on Instagram, email me, brett@brotalion.com, and we'll get you squared away. Thanks.
Hey, welcome to Hangar Z Podcast. I'm your host, John Gray, coming back live-ish from Echo Heliops Austin 2022. This is the last interview of the show. It's kind of hard to believe that the show's over, or just about over. It's been a great experience for us. Yeah. Can't say enough good things about how well this conference is put together. We've saved this interview till the end.
Saved the best for last.
So, going back to APSA, had a great experience there too. I got to sit in on a class that was taught by Terry Mauchi. It was a leadership course. And I knew after sitting through that class that I was going to see you out here in Austin. And I knew that needed to be a topic of our conversation today. We had the opportunity to talk to Terry a while back through a Bell-sponsored episode. So I'd like to refer people back to that episode to get a full profile of Terry, and he's got a very extensive background and a lot of knowledge with all things aviation. But leadership is I think that his area of expertise that resonates with me most. So Terry, thank you for joining us on the podcast, and thank you for being here.
No, absolutely, guys. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know about the best for last. Maybe you ran out of options, the way I'm thinking of that. But anyway, I'm happy to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, every conversation that we have with you is, I think I'm over here taking notes. But with every episode of the podcast, we start with Drink of the Day. I think, between caffeination and alcohol, there's one way or the other, but we're kind of in the middle right now. We're the resident water experts. I'm going with it's not lime water or whatever it was. Was it cucumber water?
Cucumber water. Yesterday? Yeah.
This is just regular water from a Massif cup that we got. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. Am I saying that right? Massif?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have to bring them on so we can get their proper pronunciation.
I do know I like their gear. Like I said, I had a chance to demo some of their stuff. They have great flight gear. So. Anyways, they brought this cup over and hooked us up. So, Terry, I see you got a clear liquid over there. I'm not sure if that's vodka or water. What
No, that is definitely water, and it's cool and it's wet, and it's good. Yeah.
Jeff, how about you?
I'm actually out of water right now. I just had another glass. I was loading up on the cucumber water at our hotel this morning down the lobby while I was waiting for John. And then they took away the coffee, man. Like, they had a coffee cart out here earlier. I was hoping to get maybe one more cup of coffee, but I'll have to go on the lookout for some.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Echo, the things that have been cool, I mean, they've had breakfast here in the morning for us. Yesterday they had lunch for us. They have, social gatherings at night with, at the bar. And
food.
It's been really cool. This morning there's a breakfast bar, right catty corner to us, and our booth ended up being like the breakfast spot, which was kind of cool. We looked around and there's, a handful of guys over here chatting.
Yeah, we had the SR3 guys over here, and It's been a really fun. This has been a really fun event.
Yeah.
I mean, just
it has been, for
just
sure.
Everybody coming together and the way they have these social events too, is, you know, so that not everybody's going their separate directions at the end of the day. It's keeping everybody together and networking. And it's just been, I mean, we got to hang out with Clay Lacey last night and went out and had some dinner with him. And this has been a really great experience.
Yeah. This morning was definitely the lightest that I've seen the floor. I think there's some tumbleweeds blowing through here for a while. I think everyone enjoyed that bar a little bit too much last night.
So. Yeah, it's starting to kick into gear now.
You see some people kind of walking through here like zombies right now. But man, it's been great. Again, happy to have you.
Yeah.
The next part, I know this is the part you've been anticipating the most, is the hot seat.
Oh, man.
He asks, you know, which seat's the hot seat? And you sit down, and like, all of them are. So, our hot seat.
My goal, John, is to come on this show one day and ask you guys a hot seat question that you're not prepared for. I think that would, I'll plant that seed now.
We'll ask you a question, then you can ask us a question.
Fair enough.
That's like a double hot seat, I guess. So today's hot seat question is, what is your thoughts on clowns?
My thoughts on clowns.
Not like leadership clowns.
We'll get into that later.
Well, my first thought that came into mind was, maybe I'm sitting with clowns now.
Definitely.
You got two clowns sitting by you right now.
I get myself into trouble in a way I look at that. I don't think I have a thought on clowns.
I absolutely hate clowns. Dude, ever since I was a kid. They're creepy little things.
Yeah.
They're big sometimes.
Right.
Like Ronald McDonald, he's kind of a clown. That's scary.
I've heard of people like that, and now I know one. Sitting right next to me.
Jeff, what's your thought?
Yeah, I've never really put a whole lot of thought into it, you know. They do have like the creepy clown things, you know, like from It and stuff like that, that I guess that would freak you out. Like, you know, people go around randomly sometimes and put the red balloons from, you know, storm drains and stuff. But I haven't put a whole lot of thought into that. So
when I was a kid, my brother, you know, he's quite a bit old. Well, he's 8 years older than me. He pinned me to the floor and made me watch the scary parts of It.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was the catalyst that made me hate clowns, you know. Yep. But I absolutely hate clowns. So I hope someday, Terry, you come to hate them too.
I'm going to think of clowns differently now.
You know what? If you hate them, we hate them, John.
Thank you. Thanks for the sympathy. Well, Terry, for people that haven't, you know, heard the podcast, or heard, you've been a part of actually quite a few podcasts. You're like on the podcast circuit, which I like to hear. It's, you know, it's, you got a good message. It's getting out. It resonates with a lot of people. But for those that haven't heard you speak before, can you kind of just give us a brief background of, you know, how you got into aviation and where you are now?
Yeah, no, you bet. I started out as an Army guy, as an OH-58 pilot, and kind of went through the ranks there. I've worked for a couple of for-profit 135, 133 companies, but spent the bulk of my career with the state of Arizona, where I retired from there 3 years ago as an aviation commander. And we had public safety, emergency management, transportation, and forestry under that aviation umbrella there. And today I work for Bell, where I manage what we call the parapublic segment. And for Bell, parapublic is anything police, fire, search, and rescue. So I'm a liaison in that regard on behalf of Bell.
We were talking about some of the challenging conditions that you guys experience in Arizona. Can you speak to that a little bit as far as the topography and your response area and stuff?
Yeah, you bet. So Arizona is a typical western state that's very rural, rugged, if you will. I like to think of it as helicopter country, you know, where there's a lot of outdoor use and people that get into trouble that are in hard-to-access areas and, you know, where helicopters make their money. It's a big state, 123,000 square miles, and some of the most remote places on the earth when you consider Grand Canyon and some of those types of areas.
But you guys are doing the law enforcement mission, search and rescue. Are you guys doing any firefighting?
We do. So that public safety aviation umbrella incorporates Arizona forestry and an initial attack program there. And this time of year, obviously, quite busy with the initial tech, and then you know, at times work hand in hand with the larger forestry assets, the tankers and the larger seats, etc.
As far as the helicopter assets you guys have with Arizona DPS, what were you guys using?
So they're right now in the middle of a transition. They're in the Bell 407 and transitioning into the Bell 429. We've got number two just coming online, number three that's in the works, and soon to be a pure Bell 429 fleet there in Arizona.
Okay. So you retired from there as the commander, and then you moved into this position within Bell, and you've kind of had an opportunity to influence the greater North American law enforcement or public safety aviation market, with your knowledge of leadership and obviously your knowledge of aircraft and specifically Bell aircraft. Can you talk about, I don't want you to have to go into the whole class that you've taught, but can you kind of give us a little bit of your philosophy on leadership?
Yeah, you bet. There's so many aspects to aviation, and leadership is one of those. And so many times, and like so many industries, we focus on the task at hand. And when you're a technical industry like aviation, that's critical, right? And we do that, and sometimes we overlook leadership. I think our industry is really good at creating technicians, pilots, tactical flight officers, etc. And that doesn't always mean we're going to become great leaders in that regard. Don't get me wrong, we do have some amazing leaders in law enforcement aviation in particular, but we also have some cases in which maybe that hasn't been properly developed or developed as well as it could be. So,
and we just sat in on a pilot panel that Clay Lacy was a part of, and he made an interesting point, which is true. You take a test on Friday, and on Monday you're a supervisor.
Right.
And I think oftentimes the whole process, the grooming and development of leaders doesn't happen from an early stage. It's something that's literally overnight sometimes.
Right. Right. I think just because a guy has a certificate in his pocket doesn't mean he's going to be a great leader. And on the converse, a great leader that maybe doesn't have that certificate also doesn't mean he's going to be a great leader in aviation. Right. There's definitely a bridge that has to be crossed there in that regard. And so back to your original question, the focus is to help, I guess, cross that bridge, to bridge those gaps, if you will.
In your class, you talked about good leader is someone who develops a good culture.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so often leaders get sidetracked, if you will, to where they're trying to change their people. A goal of effective leadership is never to change people. It's to change behavior or to change a culture in which that behavior can thrive. I like to refer to it, it's leadership of a team versus the leadership of yourself. If all I want to do is change people and do things my way, the only thing I'm really doing is leading myself. And so to me, the emphasis becomes a focus on team versus a focus of self.
Yeah, I think when you get into that focus on team as a supervisor in law enforcement in particular, it's a whole change in paradigm from the previous parts of your career. And I think that's where we see a lot of failure in law enforcement in particular, is this idea that now, you should be, and you said it, you should be removing obstacles from people's career to make, or from what they have to do to enable them to become successful.
Right.
And that requires you looking beyond yourself, looking to build these team members up instead of building yourself.
Right, right. No, the common thing is we empower the employees, right? But what does empower really mean? Part of that is removing barriers. Yes, we need to resource them. How much can we do on that? Typically not as much as we can do on removing of the barriers. And when we have that focus on team, we have to know what those barriers are. Many times we just can ask our people that are working for us what those are. What do you need? What do you want? What makes you mad? And you'll identify those barriers. And that's that focus on team, where that type of mentality, if you will, comes into play.
One of our previous guests, he's an Arizona DPS, Michael Allen. Obviously, he had a lot of great things to say about you. He talked about how you kind of spurred this change that they're experiencing in Arizona DPS now, its growth in the development of that unit. Can you talk about kind of how you came in and changed some of the things that were happening there and what you've seen through that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've always said, I guess I give credit to a boss from years and years ago, if you're not growing, you're going away. In today's world, if you're not pushing to become better, to become bigger, to add to your fleet, et cetera, someone else probably is. They're probably trying to take your resources away from your team. So I've always had this mentality, if you're not growing, you're going away. And you can, perhaps keep those folks at bay, And so how do you actually do that? It's with a culture. I mean, if you're a leader in a team and you think you're the one that's going to push everything forward, you're sorely wrong. And sometimes, I'll just be direct, sometimes that arrogance of a leader gets in the way of seeing that potential growth that can actually come and be driven by the team itself.
Yeah, that's a strong word, and it's very applicable in these scenarios. You know, the arrogance is, I mean, one, arrogance kills you in aviation in general.
Yeah.
But if you're in a management position, you're not flying, that arrogance, in my opinion, can kill a unit very quickly, you know.
Right. And I think it's important to differentiate between pride and arrogance. You know, in this business, we have very good reason to be very prideful of what we do.
Yeah.
And we should be. And we should absolutely be. But when that pride turns into an arrogance, especially at the leadership level, arrogance kills effective leadership. And when we look at our industry, really any type A type industry, you'll see a lot of that. And I know that's a very bold statement that might be controversial, but I know I'm talking to people in your audience that's in this industry. We see that, right? We've all had that supervisor, that manager, that leader that thought it was all about them versus the team, and it's not effective.
I think on that point is because of the way the structure of a law enforcement agency and the leadership, you know, the chain of command, and is the, you know, like a lieutenant comes into a unit for 3 years and then rotates out to another assignment. And so their goal, it seems to be, is that, well, look at what I've done. Look at, you know, what I've done. And sometimes, and that involves, you know, stepping on their people or not doing what's right by their people to make themselves look good, and so that they can now move up the chain to get another promotion or whatever the case is, where, like you had said, Terry, is that the, you know, is enabling your people, removing those barriers and allowing your people to thrive says more to me about a leader and somebody that I would want, if I was the chief of police, to promote, is going to be the person that's doing right for their people to let the organization thrive.
Right.
And, you know, on that is what I've seen, and Clay brought it up in the pilot panel, is, you know, we've created these toxic environments by doing that, by having these people that are more concerned about their own appearance than, and not putting that ego aside. And I've said it before that, you know, sometimes if you're not going to promote people into leadership positions that understand aviation, and you're going to take a person that's, you know, a police lieutenant that maybe comes out of patrol or comes out of another investigative assignment, and you're going to put them in charge of the aviation unit, if that's your structure, then that leader needs to then put that ego aside that, hey, I'm the boss, and understand that your subject matter experts are going to be those people in that unit that do that very technical job. And one thing is, you know, like putting a sergeant or a lieutenant in charge of a SWAT team has not been to SWAT school, has not operated on a SWAT team, that would be almost unheard of. I think by most agencies, they would look at it and say, that's ridiculous. We'd never do that. But then they turn around and do it on the aviation side. And I think that's where we really shoot ourselves,
right,
you know, in the foot, instead of recognizing that, hey, we need to have a specific, maybe chain of command for the aviation unit where we develop those, you know, people into those positions that, you know, come from an aviation background, even though.
Before we go any further, I would like to again thank our sponsor, Metro Aviation. Metro Aviation is an awesome company that provides the safest and highest quality traditional aircraft operations, completions, and maintenance. Metro Aviation's foundation of quality, safety, and customer service has remained with them for 35 years and is still the cornerstone of their company. As the largest privately held traditional air medical operator in the U.S. and the largest air medical completion center in the world, Metro Aviation is here to serve your needs. We would also like to thank our supporters on Patreon.
They might have started out as just a patrol cop with no experience in aviation, but brought them up as pilots or TFOs in that unit, and then allow them to develop into those leadership roles and keep them there, because when those guys go away, whether it's to retire or move on to another assignment, Randy Rouse brought it up in the pilot panel too, is, you know, a guy promotes to sergeant, and what do? You rotate him out of the unit, send him back to patrol, and now you've lost that experience, and maybe not, they come back at some point. And so now you've also lost that monetary investment and all that training that they've received as a commercial pilot, and now send them back out to patrol. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, for sure.
I think you hit a couple good points there, Jeff. One, it's not normal in aviation. You know, if you look at aviation leadership outside of this segment, we don't do that.
Right.
Right here in the U.S., if you're a Part 135 company, by federal law, that director of operations, that chief pilot, has to have a level of experience to even become eligible for that position. We don't always do that in law enforcement aviation. That doesn't mean it's always bad, though. I mean, some of the great leaders that I reference are that category, where they don't have that aviation experience, but the thing they typically bring into that is a realization that they don't have that, and an ego, or a lack of ego, I should say, that allows them to tap into that SME experience.
Right.
That's what makes the difference, and that's what is what can make it successful. The second point I think I heard you say there was, even if I am that arrogant leader that doesn't need those people, you know, and all I want to do is lead myself to the top, I'm still foolish to not tap into these experts that are around me. You know, even if they're only half as good as I think they are, collectively, they're going to be better than I am. And right. And you can utilize that. You know, if you wrongly want to make about yourself, you can still utilize that and tap into that to a benefit.
Yeah, the thought that comes to mind when you talk about that point is accommodations. You know, a lot of times accommodations are written for the benefit of the crews that have gone out and done an amazing job with whatever the thing is that they just did.
Right.
But what that does, in my opinion, is not only highlights the good work that those people have done, but it highlights the supervisor himself.
Right.
You know, he's obviously a good leader, surrounds himself with people that are experts in the things that he's not experts in. Right.
Right.
An expert in. So I think while it highlights the crews, it highlights the supervisor, and it highlights the unit as a whole. So I think these supervisors that aren't recognizing the good work that's being done, and man, all these crews, all these stories we hear, there is amazing work being done day in, day out. It's nonstop.
Right.
So the fact that, you know, they're not recognized, or some of these supervisors don't recognize their crews, to me, they're doing themselves an injustice in that way you're talking about. You know, it would reflect upon them, I think, if they did that.
No, absolutely, and especially in today's culture in policing, where there's a, you know, there's, let's face it, there's a recruitment and a retention problem, even in aviation. You know, so we can tap into those types of tools to address that. You know, respect and appreciation, I think, is really what you're saying. You know, people don't leave organizations. They'll tell you they leave because of money. In my opinion, they leave because of bad leadership.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
and ultimately, it comes down to leaving because of lack of respect and appreciation. So that doesn't always cost money. Sometimes it's very cheap to actually sincerely fulfill that. And, you know, if you want to talk about tasks of a leader, that should be at the top of that. As well as the other end of that spectrum, you know, be a leader, which sometimes means discipline. Sometimes, you know, taking those bold steps. You know, an effective leader is always managing up or managing out. Anything in between is not leadership at all. And so respect, appreciation, that other end of the spectrum is part of that as well.
You brought up in the class that I took a question that you ask your personnel. I think the question was something to the effect of, tell me something you like, something you hate, something you need, or something. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, for me, it's essentially, you know, what do you need, what do you want, what makes you mad?
Yeah, nice.
And as simple as those questions are, we typically don't do it as leaders. You know, and some of those problems that in my mind are insurmountable, the answers are out there, and we just don't ask. You know, what is it that you know is making you mad is a great one. And I've been shocked many a time in the past when we actually take the time to see what that is and have a culture in which we're allowed to ask it and they're allowed to freely answer it. What you take out of that type of mentality is just truly amazing.
Yeah.
You talked about in your program your maintenance professionals. You know, they're falling off ladders, yeah, and hurting themselves. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so a great example. So I believe the example we gave, we had a rash of hangar incidents, all kinds of stuff. But essentially we had our mechanics, or our technicians, I should say, falling off of ladders. And, you know, how are we going to stop this? And, you know, is it discipline? What is it? We finally just sat down with the technician and said, hey, what's it going to take for you to stop falling off these ladders? And they said, well, you know, they make these helicopter platforms that are designed for the make and model, and they have these railings, and how come we haven't bought these before? Well, no one ever asked us. And it was literally that simple. Those are not expensive items, and we stopped those incidents cold turkey. You know, I love the technician example, and I'm appreciative that you actually remembered those, John. Another one of those was, what makes you mad? They didn't want to be called mechanics. Mechanics were the guys that were down in the motor pool working on the patrol cars, and they felt that working on helicopters, they wanted to be called technicians. This was the number one complaint among our technicians there. We never asked them, thus they never told us. You know how hard it is to change a classification name from mechanic to technician? It doesn't cost any money to do that. And we literally took away their number one complaint by simply taking the time to sit down. You know, in formal leadership class, you learn, you got to know your people. Well, what is that actually? It's simply asking them things. I'm not saying go ask, you know, what do you need, what do you want, what makes you mad, but have a culture in which you're allowed to ask that in your way so you can get to know your people in your way.
I'd like to see an official city document that says that exact thing.
Yeah.
What makes you mad? That'd be cool.
Yeah.
People will want to tell you. Yeah. That doesn't mean whatever they tell you, you're going to do.
Yeah.
Right.
But you now have a pulse in which you can lead from.
Again, going back to the you're trying to develop a culture, and how do you develop a culture? You put the people first, and you ask them these questions. And those things, you know, once they're complete, again, they lend to the overall efficiency and operational readiness of your unit, which, again, goes back to, as a supervisor, if you want to make yourself look good, you're now effective and your operational readiness goes up. You know, so that's huge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's so many aspects to that culture building, if you will. Tapping into the people is without a doubt one, and knowing your people and knowing what makes them tip. At the end of the day, and I'm not saying disregard your own ideas and your own methods. I'm saying don't forget about the people you're actually leading. And when it becomes truly their idea, it becomes their motivators, their drivers, and they're the ones that are actually going to get you to that point that you're trying to collectively get to. And it has to be a guiding coalition, if you will. It can't be just you and you're forcing everybody to do it, and it can't be the other way either.
Yeah, those are huge. That class was really good. I think it was only an 1-hour class, but my hand was on fire because I was taking so many notes. So, yeah, I'm excited to sit in your class. You got a leadership panel coming up, and then you've got a 2-hour leadership block this afternoon. So, yeah, I'm excited for that.
I'll have to talk slower, I guess, for a 2-hour session.
No, I mean, the 1-hour session that we went in through, I feel like we could have broken into, you know, all kinds of different conversations about these things and examples that you brought up. And there's just a huge need for leadership development, I think, in our industry. And it's great to see, you know, someone like yourself making the effort to bring some solutions to the table. Because, you know, we like to complain about it, but not a lot of people are offering solutions. So you're doing that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What's kind of interesting, John, you alluded to this earlier. I think we all get into aviation because we have a love for the technical side of aviation, right, or the tactical side of aviation. And for me personally, that is still there without a doubt, but it's morphed into also a love of people, I guess. And I don't mean to be touchy-feely with that. I mean that from an organizational behavior, from a human behavior, from a human developmental standpoint. To me, it's fascinating to, when you actually take these principles, put them into practice, you know, in a passionate way to see the outcome from that is truly amazing.
It kind of reminded me of another thing you brought up earlier, talking about disciplinary action.
Yeah.
You know, I think you had an example of someone in your organization that was extremely klutzy at one point. And, you know, your love for people put you in a position where you love that person so much you didn't want to see them.
Right.
Or you don't want to see them hurt themselves, you know, which, you know, we don't need to get into the story, but can you just touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, you bet. The basis of that story is personal for me. I've been to 6 aviation funerals over the career in which I knew the individual that was in that funeral. And what else they all had in common is I knew something about them, and I wasn't surprised about the accident. You know, I knew the gentleman was going through a serious divorce. you know, and it was affecting his flying, but I didn't say anything. I knew another gentleman was overconfident. I knew another gentleman was a bit of an airhead around the helicopters. And so it's a love of people challenges and confronts each other on stuff like that, because it actually might be their life that's in danger, you know. And when we're in leadership roles, that's the number one. You're not leading that individual if you don't address that issue. That doesn't always mean you're managing them out. Sometimes you're managing them up. You know, sometimes you're providing discipline or further training. Sometimes you are sitting down and having that tough conversation, and you know, someone's getting reassigned. You know, I'm a firm believer that anybody in any organization, I don't care what the industry is, every individual has equal value and equal contribution. There's many of those individuals, though, that have been improperly developed or wrongly assigned. And it's our job as leaders to identify those and fix those areas. You're either leading, you know, managing them up, or you're managing out. Anything else is in the middle is not leadership at all.
Yeah, you talked about, you know, not having this tough conversation with somebody is tough, but it's a lot easier than having the conversation with the family down the road, you know, explaining about this tragic incident that had taken place when you knew better, you know, as a leader, you didn't want to have this tough conversation. So I think that's great.
I always think that for anyone, not just a leader, but if you were to sit back and, you know, and it's happened, you know, time and time again where, you know, this tragic incident occurs and somebody says, well, if there was going to be anyone, it was going to be that guy that was going to do it. And anyone in that organization, if you identify that, you know, it's incumbent upon you to say something to, you know, regardless of what the outcome is to stop that, you know, that error chain from happening. You know, even if it's early on in their career, just either address, you know, addressing it now before it snowballs into a really big catastrophe later is to say something, and that's incumbent. And I think sometimes there's obviously reluctance to do that because you might feel like you're shooting yourself in the foot. You're going to make a target out of yourself, whatever, but it's incumbent upon you to do that. And that was something that I've had training or not training, but was mentored into me early on in my career as a, you know, in the Army, was that, you know, that we have to stop those incidents. If we see it, we have to say something. Right. And it's sometimes hard to do. It's very hard to do. But it's incumbent to do that, because I'm not going to be the guy that's going to sit back and be the one go, well, yep, we always knew that was going to happen to that guy or gal or whatever the case is, because, you know, I don't know how you move forward after that, that with that on your conscience that you didn't say something.
You know, we learn all that stuff, but it really comes down to a matter. Are we exercising? Are we actually practicing what we preach in that regard? I think it's not just on the safety side. I think it's on the mission performance side as well. I think one of the hardest thing a supervisor or any leader has to do is actually to talk about the performance of an individual with that individual. I mean, you essentially have to sit down with this person you love, quotations that, hey, you're messing up. And it's so important to tell that follower what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. That's leadership, right? It's very hard to do. It's even harder to put that in writing. When you make it about safety and that error chain, it's critical that you do that. I mean, lives are literally at stake when we don't do that. That's true leadership. So it's that love of people, and sometimes that love of people very often is looked at harshly. And you know, leadership is not all about making friends. It's about leading your people to better and, you know, stronger things.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I hear as a common theme is, you know, once you become a supervisor, nobody wants to sit by you. You know, you kind of become this person on the island, isolated to yourself, which is tough. But I feel like, you know, you don't have to be in that position. I feel like if you're putting your people first, that's not going to be as likely, you know.
Yeah. Some of the most effective leaders I've known, and my guess for you guys as well, are the leaders that made themselves vulnerable. You know, they truly took themselves out of the equation, and if the team fails, I'm going to fail and go down with them. They took that vulnerability, and examples I've seen of that, they just super excelled.
Yeah.
You know, when they got themselves to that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to sitting down on your leadership course that's coming up this afternoon, and the leadership panel that's coming up as well. It's just a much needed conversation, and it's near and dear to Jeff and I's heart. So thank you for joining us with that. Anything in closing before we sign out?
No, I think in the future we'd like to get, I'd love to get, you know, Terry and Clay on together and have a, you know, a pilot panel on the podcast. I think it would be great.
Yeah.
Because both of you are, I think, outstanding leaders and bring so much to the table that I think that anybody in our industry needs to hear. It would be fun to sit down and talk.
When I think about you and Clay, the things that I admire in both of you is your leadership ability is what you said, just your love for people and the fact mm-hmm. that you're putting people first. I think the moment you do that, you're doing the right things for the right reason, and people will literally follow you, you know, to the edge of a cliff.
Clay's a great guy. I would be humbled to sit with him. I could maybe be the bad example. He could be the good example. But collectively, we could ask you guys the hot seat questions.
Oh, yeah, there
that
you
would
go.
Be my goal.
All right, we'll make that happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, Terry, for joining us, and we'll catch you this afternoon.
Sounds good. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks,
right, appreciate
too.
It. See ya.
Time to close up that hangar until next time. Thanks for joining us on the Hangar Z podcast. Thanks again to Metro Aviation for sponsoring the Hangar Z podcast. Metro Aviation's mission is to provide the safest and highest quality traditional aircraft operations, completions, and maintenance so that they can allow their customers to safely and effectively accomplish their mission profile, allow their employees to exercise their talents and maximize their potential, and to ensure the financial stability of the corporation. Metro Aviation is constantly growing their capabilities and expanding their reach. Metro holds more than 30 STCs and completes about 35 aircraft each year for U.S. customers and global clients. We would also like to thank our supporters on Patreon.